Hello and welcome to everyone to this evening's Hidden Sparks Without Walls webinar. My name is Judith Telesnik and I'm so happy that you are joining us for tonight's joint parent and teacher webinar. For those of you who are new to Hidden Sparks Without Walls, our webinars are designed to... Jory?
Yes?
There's a lot of feedback on the line.
Okay, I am working on it. I muted everything, and everyone seems to be muted, except a few people. Okay.
For those of you who are new to Hidden Sparks Without Walls, our webinars are designed to inform and engage our participants so that not only will you have a better theoretical understanding of the topic, but we hope that you will come away with some practical steps to implement with your students and children in the near future. For all of our returning participants, welcome back. This evening, we will be learning about Children and Screen Time, a practical guide to media use for children. In about 24 hours, this session will be available to listen to at any time from the Hidden Sparks website, either streaming online or as a podcast. The PowerPoint can also be downloaded at any time for future reference. Immediately after the call, you're going to receive a very short survey, which we would like you to complete. We review them very carefully, and your thoughts and reactions help shape the planning for future sessions. By now, you know that your phone is muted, so when you speak, no other webinar participants can hear you. This will allow us all to listen to the presentation without any background noise. Throughout the session, you can post comments or questions to the chat room on the right-hand side of your screen. If you'd like to practice using that feature, please do so now. Make sure that your comment is posted to all attendees. If it's not, you can choose that option from the drop-down menu. It's right at the bottom of the chat room. Once you post the question or comment, we will be sure to address it before the end of that slide. At points throughout the webinar, the presenter may ask for a show of hands. In order to raise your hand, you simply click on the hand button. That is located in the chat area about halfway down the screen on the left-hand side of the chat space. Please take a minute to practice this function. Click once on the hand icon to raise your hand, and click on it a second time to lower your hand. Feel free at any point during the webinar to post comments or questions into the chat room. Please note that we will begin recording the session shortly, and we ask that when you speak, you follow these guidelines. When speaking to a participant, only use first names, and if you are discussing a student, please only first names or pseudonyms to protect his or her identity. At the end of the session, we will open up the phone line so that you can ask questions as well. At that point, you can click on the hand icon that will raise your hand to indicate to us that you'd like to ask a question, and we will unmute the phones one at a time so people can ask their questions, and we'll let you know that we're unmuting your phone. At that point, it is extremely important that you follow the etiquette that we've asked for people when they call in. Using the right phone, a cell phone is very challenging for webinar listeners. We know that you'll be in a quiet, undisturbed room. Otherwise, we hear a lot of background noise, and we won't be able to hear your questions. And we really ask that you never put the conference call on hold. Sometimes we hear that hold music. Call waiting can also disrupt the call. I hope that you've all disabled your call waiting by pressing star 70 before you called in. And feel free to say your first name and ask your question once you're unmuted. And as I said before, the chat room is available at any point. And now we're ready to begin tonight's session, and I'm delighted to introduce our presenter, Jeannie Crowley. Jeannie Crowley is the manager of digital media and learning at Bank Street College. Her background includes years as a K-12 special education teacher and teacher trainer in the Bronx. With master's degrees in both elementary education and digital media, she works with educators to create innovative and constructivist digital learning experiences for Children. She received the Samsung Hope for Education and ING Unsung Heroes Awards for her work with young children and technology. I'm also delighted to introduce our co-facilitator, Jory Stillman, who will be working with Jeannie tonight. Welcome to Jory and Jeannie, and Jeannie, the floor is now yours.
Can you hear me okay? Just double checking.
Yeah.
Good, perfect. So before we get started, I wanted to give you a warm welcome. I know it's late in the evening, and I really appreciate your time. And two, when I tend to get very excited about topics, sometimes I speak a little quickly. So I actively encourage you to mention in the chat, you know, Jeannie, slow down. I used to tell my students all the time because I get very passionate about what I'm talking about. And one thing that wasn't in my bio is I'm also a mother of a three-year-old. So, you know, a lot of things I'm talking about tonight are things that, there we go. I'll try to speak a little bit more loudly. Thank you, Susan. One of the things that I'll be talking about tonight as a mother of a three-year-old are things that both a professional I'm aware of, but as a mother I've been, you know, exposed to as well. So I've been on both sides of the fence. The webinar this evening is intended for both teachers and parents. So if you're a parent of a young child, you can use this material right away with your young child. I encourage you to use the materials if your child has a caretaker beside you in their lives. And if you're a teacher, I'm trying to model how you can talk to parents about media use with young children, because it is a sensitive topic, because we are talking about essentially parenting choices, what a parent chooses to do in their free time with their children. So it's maintaining that balance between what the research says, the understanding also that this is a parental choice, and we also have the practicalities of being very busy, and occasionally children will watch TV and other forms of media. So how do we make the right choices when our children are watching TV or if we just need a break? So this is a webinar focused mostly on screen time and limiting screen time. It's part of a three-part series. So we'll briefly touch on how to make screen time very meaningful, cognitively active versus cognitively passive screen time. And in January, we have a webinar that focuses a little bit more on that. And we will talk a little bit about bullying at the very end. And there's a more fleshed out webinar for that in March. And that's more for the older students, the 7 and older crowd. So if you look at your screen now, if you have it available, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about your own practices and what your children are currently doing, what the research shows the effects of those screen time moments are on your children, what the limits are of screen time, when it really is, how much is too much, because there are some hard and fast rules for that the research shows. I rarely make absolute statements, but there are a few times when it's really important you don't use television with your children. When we stop using television with our children, there's a lot of tantrums that often go with that, especially if they're accustomed to it as part of the routine. So we'll talk a little bit about how to reduce those tantrums and make it a little bit easier to switch into a new routine. And then a couple of examples about how you can change the way that you use television and your daily routines to reduce screen time. And we have a case study about including your children into kitchen routines. Briefly, we'll touch on the difference between cognitively active and cognitively passive. A few words in every sentence are muted. Let me see if I can get the mic a little closer and turn it up. And I'm also a soft talker, so let me pull it up a little bit. Is that a little bit better? And I'll bring my voice up a little bit too, because I know I tend to speak a little low. And the final thing is, when we actually do choose media for our children, you know, just need a break. How exactly do we make the right choices? How do we thoughtfully choose that movie or that show that we're going to show our child during the time that we need 30 minutes or an hour for an activity that's adult only? Let's move to the first one. So we'll learn the impact of too much screen time on your children, how to reduce screen time for your children, how to evaluate the screen time when they are exposed to it, and how to talk to parents about screen time. As we go through this, I really encourage you to ask questions, and as Dinah and Susan have already spoken up, if my voice goes in and out, please let me know, and I'll make sure to adjust the microphone and speak a little bit more loudly if I tend to lose that practice. And if I say anything that you would like a little bit more information on, if there's any questions, I really encourage you to ask the question in chat, and if for some reason I miss it because there's a lot of questions, Jory will bring it to my attention. We'll make sure to address it before we move on to the next one. So before we get started into the nitty-gritty, I'd like to take an opportunity, and if you have a little pencil handy or a pen handy, or if you just want to make a mental note to yourself about how much time you currently estimate your child spends on screen time. And when I say screen time, that could be, you know, TV, it could be on the iPad, it could be looking at a phone. How much you think your child does each day. And when they're looking through the screen time, try to think about what type it is. Is it mostly TV? Is it mostly, you know, surfing the web? Is it mostly video games? Think about the nature of it. And when they're doing that the most. So what are you doing when your child is having those screen time? Are you cooking dinner? Are you at the dentist office? Are you doing work? When do you find that it's most often that, I see a note from Shufra, but I'm not sure what it says. When do you find that it's most often that your child has screen time? I know in my personal life, the most often is, you know, towards the end of the day, and I have a few work emails to take care of, and there might be a 30-minute window there. And also think about your own personal screen time. Are there favorite movies that you really love to watch? Are you a particular fan of a TV show that you watch regularly on Wednesday night, for example? Do you often use your cell phone to check work emails? So these are some questions that you can ask yourself, or if you're an educator working with a parent, it's a good way to kick it off. We're going to come back to these, so if you have a chance to jot it down, that would be really great. Because as we go through this, we might learn a little bit more about how our own practices impact our children's access to screen time. And also, we tend to underestimate how much time, and I include myself in the we, we tend to underestimate how much time that our children actually spend looking at a screen during the day. So before we get into the practical solutions for screen time, I think it's really important to talk about what the research has said about too much screen time for young children. And these are from the American Pediatrics Association. And it's fairly startling information, and I want to get it out of the way first so we just know why we need to limit the screen time. It's not a matter of opinion. It's merely, here's what some of the actual substantiated results of too much screen time are on young children. So the first one is obesity. Children who watch more than 2 hours a day of TV are more likely to be overweight. And this is a fairly complex problem. One, if they're watching 2 hours of TV, there's an opportunity cost. They're not outside running around. They're not physically active. They're not moving. So there's the reduction of activity that leads to obesity. And then often paired with the screen time, they might be eating snacks or, you know, not thinking while eating, which can also lead to childhood obesity. Another one is irregular sleep. The more TV children watch, the more likely they're going to resist going to bed and have trouble falling asleep. And this is something to look for, particularly in your children. Are they unexpectedly having difficulty sleeping, especially after a movie or a TV show? You can start observationally making these connections. This is especially true if it's TV right before bed. So if your child's watching TV right until 8 o'clock and bedtime's 8:15, pushing the screen time right up into bedtime has actually been shown to cause even more sleep problems. And we'll talk a little bit about how do you put a little gap between screen time and bedtime and have a transition period to reduce some of those sleep issues. Another aspect is behavioral problems. So children who have 2 or more hours of screen time a day are more likely to have emotional, social, and attention problems. And exposure to video games also increases the risk of attention problems in children, and children who watch excessive amounts of TV are more likely to bully children than who don't. So that's a lot of information there, and this also comes back to that opportunity cost. So if they're spending 2 hours watching TV every day, that's 2 hours they're not interacting with their peers. That's time that they're watching, you know, depending upon what shows they're watching, they're seeing perhaps not the best modeling for problem solving, and they're just not getting the social interaction that they probably need at that age of development. And I keep using the term 2 hours because 2 hours is about the limit. Anything under two, they've shown, does not cause these problems to this extent. But once you start slipping over the 2 hour range per day consistently is when you start seeing these issues. Another issue is impaired academic performance. So elementary students who have TVs in their bedroom tend to perform worse in tests than those who don't. And this really just comes back to the fact that if they're watching TV, you know, they're not doing other creative thinking, and they may not be doing their homework. I mean, I remember when I was a child that we had the TV in the main room, so it was very easy to monitor when TV is being watched or not. So having a TV in the bedroom is particularly risky. Another risk from too much screen time is violence. So too much exposure to violence in media can desensitize children to violence. And we'll talk a little bit more about this, but young children have a really hard time telling the difference between real and non-real violence. So cartoon violence or war reenactments or what might be playful violence on TV, they have a very hard time telling that that's pretend or play. And they become desensitized to it, even if it is animated. So children, as a result, learn to accept violent behavior as a normal part of their life and a way to solve problems. And finally, there's just less time for play. So if you're doing more than 2 hours a day of TV or other media, and I include other media to be the iPad or the phone, it's just less time that you're playing independently. You're playing with a peer with blocks or drawing or art or any of those things. So it's another opportunity cost. So these are the main things that we have to worry about why we're even having a conversation in the first place, about why we really need to reduce these screen times. So one of the things that is really, really important, and this is very startling for many parents, is that there is absolutely no benefit for passive media in children under two. And there's been a lot, and what I mean by passive media is, you know, sitting there and watching a show, for example. And there was a case recently, a few years ago, where baby Einstein, I think, they had to return a whole bunch of money to parents because they had advertised that there would be all these benefits from watching baby Einstein. But the research has proven that children, you know, very, very young children, two and under, just do not learn very well from watching videos. They can do it, but it's very, very inefficient. So, for example, if a child was to learn their colors from a video and under two, it might take them 10 hours, and I'm using rough numbers here, but they learned it from a human interactions with like physical objects, it might take them 2 hours. So it's an inefficient way to do it. So even though over long periods of exposure, a child may learn something from the video, they have to spend so much time with the video that the risks really outweigh the benefits. Children of any age, and this includes your older children of 7, 8, 9, 10, should definitely not watch more than 2 hours per day. And when I say 2 hours a day, you know, you tend to think of a two-hour marathon of this one movie, but they mean 2 hours in any form. So that could be 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. So 2 hours in totality. That's one of the reasons I asked you to jot down that number at the beginning, because when even myself, when I tend to think about how much time that my daughter spends looking at the screen, I tend to think of those big chunks, but I don't really think of those little 5 minutes here and there and how those add up to that total 2 hours. That really is where the research shows is the breaking point. And then a recent survey by Common Sense Media found that children 8 and younger are spending over 2 hours a day looking at screens. And so even though we know that 2 hours is kind of the limit, on average, most children are spending over 2 hours a day. And I want to show you a little bit of what that breakdown looks like. So an hour and 44 minutes in an average child's life is looking at TVs, DVD, video, that sort of thing. About 25 minutes playing media games, maybe other activities such as 6 minutes, you know, loading up, getting to where they want to go, or looking at other apps on the cell phone, iPod, or iPad. And that adds up to 2 hours and 17 minutes right there. So we're already over the breaking point. And I don't like to think of 2 hours. If you hit 2 hours and anything over is terrible and anything under is great, you try to really stay under that two-hour limit to the best of your ability and shy away from that limit, because that's really the total cap. You want to really come under that if possible. One of the things to think about too is in that screen time, how much time you actually spend yourself looking at the screen and thinking about how much time your child is watching you watch the screen. So that counts as part of your screen time. And I think that's a really important thing to note. Just quickly, if you don't mind responding, if any of you happen to have smartphones or iPads in the home, that you yourself use, that would count. If you're using it and your child's using it, seeing you use it, that counts towards their total amount of screen time. So these are what I call my my hard and fast rules. There's very, very few. I have, in addition to the 2 hours, I would say there's about four different times that it's really important to shy away from using screen time. And as I said, as a parent who does this for a profession, I still have these times where I break the rules. But these are something to keep in mind, to really try to stick to the best of your ability. So a really important time not to use media is right before bed. Do your best, if at all possible, to buffer between screen time and bedtime. So let's say, for example, your child's bedtime is at 8 o'clock, and you need like a half hour or 45 minutes just to accomplish other activities. Try to have that happen between, let's say, 6, 6:30, or 6:30 and 7:15, and then put some books or some free play or some other sort of non-screen activity as a buffer between screen time and bedtime, and it'll make a huge difference to sleep pattern and how easy it is to get your child to actually go to sleep. It's really, really important not to watch TV or movies during dinner time. This is something that's true for us as adults as well. When we're watching something while we're eating, we tend not to think about what we're consuming. We kind of just shovel food in, and that's true of children of all ages. But it's also, if you're watching TV while you're watching dinner, in addition to kind of the thoughtless eating, you're interrupting a really, really important part of the family routine, which is the ability to talk over your day during dinner. So we really encourage, for multiple reasons, not to watch movies at all or TV at all while you're having dinner. All the time is a background noise. So this is something I was actually doing myself when my child was very young and I wasn't thinking about it. I would have the TV just on as like a pleasant hum in the background. I was accomplishing work, doing laundry, because I just found it kind of comforting to have this noise in the house. But the constant presence of the TV, even if we're not watching it, draws our child's attention to the TV. So I can very easily picture a moment where my daughter was sitting on the floor and I was folding laundry and I was talking to her and her eyes just kept going right back to the screen. And I wasn't watching it and I wasn't paying attention to it. And I had honestly forgotten that it was on, but it was a constant attention grabber for her. So even if we're not aware of it being part of our lives, it's a really big draw for young children. So you want to make sure that you only have it on when you're actively watching it, and you intend for it to be watched both by you and your child. And the final one I really try to point out is it's really important not to watch it as a reward. There's a lot of really great things that you can give to your child and do for them as a reward. And if you rely on TV for good behavior, you're kind of stuck in the situation rewarding your child with something that you really don't want them to have, and you end up getting into these arguments. It's kind of like giving your child a piece of cake every time they do something great. You know that you can do it once or twice, but if you consistently get into that pattern, then you're kind of overfilling your child on cake. It's the same with TV. It's better to choose rewards that are not linked to something that you know at some point you're going to have to limit, and then at some point actually maybe go back on what you said about giving a reward. So those are kind of the four times I would say are pretty strict rules about not using media with young children. And if you have any questions as we go along, please let me know in the chat, because I'd be happy to elaborate more on any of those. So this is something that I struggled with as a parent and as a professional. When I needed to reduce screen time for my daughter, the tantrums were inevitable. So we've gotten into a routine of screen time during certain times of the day. And as soon as I tried to stop those screen time opportunities, I would be immediately met with resistance and crying and escalation of behavior. So that's inevitable. And I really want to let you know to expect that. And it's going to be very difficult, but if you persist in your routines, you'll be able to get through it. And we did. You just have to be super, super consistent about how you implement and utilize screen time at home to reduce it. So I'm going to give you a couple tips to reducing screen times that I've practiced myself and I've talked to other professionals about and have been really, really successful. So the first one is choosing little short segments rather than full movies. So if you know that you only have 15 or 20 minutes of time before you leave the house or transition to another activity, you want to choose a video that fits that time period. You don't have to turn it off in the middle, because that's a really big point of contention. Your child says, I'd love to watch Sleeping Beauty, for example. And you say, sure, knowing you only have 15 or 20 minutes, you have to stop it halfway through. And that's like a very difficult point for a lot of children to transition out of a movie. It's so much easier to stop a show at the end, you know, screen fades to black, and then you move on to the next activity. A really important thing, and we found this is true both right before you actually show screen time, and then leading through the day going up to it, is talking about the plan and sticking to it. So knowing how screen time fits into a larger set of activities makes it easier for your child to transition. So on the train home, for example, or the car ride home, you can say, we get home, we're going to watch one episode of Curious George, we're going to eat dinner, and afterwards we're going to read two books before bed. And that's kind of your mantra. You keep repeating it. And if there's any questions, it's like, we talked about it. We got home, we watched Curious George, so next thing we're going to do is eat dinner. We're going to have two books and then bed. And just kind of repeating that plan and really sticking to it is a very important and consistent part to reducing those tantrums. From personal experience, I know as soon as you cave the first time or the second time to the tantrum and extend the video, you're just encouraging more tantrums. So that's a difficult transition to get through, but it's very, very worth it to stick through it. So this is probably one of the most challenging things. How many of you, just by a quick note in the chat, have multiple caregivers who take care of your child, like grandma, a brother, a sibling, a friend next door who might watch your child occasionally? This is a really important thing to pay attention to, is having this conversation with your caretaker. And it's both for the consistency and the overall screen time. So something I realized when talking to some of my caretakers, when I was thinking about screen time, I said, okay, my daughter's watching about an hour and 15 minutes of screen time. I wasn't taking into account the hour and 15 minutes that she was watching with another caretaker, because I hadn't had that conversation. So this is a conversation that you should also have with other caretakers in your child's life, both to get a comprehensive view of really how much screen time is occurring during the day. Because if each of you are using screen time as a break, and there's two or three different people in your child's life over the course of the week, there's a lot of hidden moments there for screen time to add up. Another piece, too, is the consistency. So if you have very consistent rules about, you know, no screen time during eating, no screen time before bed, and sticking to the plan, but those rules aren't followed as consistently by other caretakers, that makes it much more challenging to reduce tantrums. And then the last one, as a suggestion to reducing screen time, is I'd say look at the routines of when you're using media and think of a way to change those routines to include your children. So one example is, and I'll use this next in a case study, is I initially, when I found when my child was younger, I was using screen time really extensively for time for me to prepare dinner. So I think if you look back to that list that you created at the very, very beginning, the first slide, when you can picture in your head your child spending the most time watching TV, if there's a pattern in that, thinking about how you can change routines so you can reduce how often your child's watching TV. Either you can include your child into those routines if possible, so with laundry or, you know, doing work in the kitchen, or thinking about how maybe you could switch your routines up a little bit to later after nap time or during nap time. I mean, so the screen time is reduced. So I'm going to do a quick case study, for example. This is based on my personal experience of kitchen routines. So, you know, I was consistently showing my daughter TV so I can get dinner on the table. So this case study of how can you have your children working with you instead of watching TV while you have dinner. When they're really, really tiny, they just want to be in the kitchen with you. So they could be, you know, mashing and playing with the food in their high chair when watching you cook, and they just want to be near you. So they don't have to necessarily be part of the cooking routine, but just being in the same room, kind of doing their own thing on the floor, mixing Cheerios is a very good way for them to spend time with you. We tend to think of toddlers as not super helpful in the kitchen, but they can be helpful if we give them jobs that they can do. So toddlers can separate vegetables, they can pull leaves. My three-year-old is exceptional at pulling the paper from onions, you know, the little crinkly outside, something I actually don't like doing and she loves to do. She gets ingredients from the fridge and supplies from the cabinet. And this took a little reorganizing on my part, so I actually had to put some of the things that I knew she could work with on the lower shelves in the cabinet and the fridge. And that's her space. So if I need a certain bowl, there's like this little cabinet that she gets all the things from. And it's a way for her to be helpful and to be part of it but also I don't have to stop in the middle of cooking to go get something down for her to be part of the process. So another way, and I put help in quotes here, that you can find ways for your children to help you. Some nights I'm cooking a dish that's just, there's hot oil and there's things all over the kitchen, and it's just really unlikely that I can find a space for my child or my children to be really productive and helpful without actually getting hurt or in the way. So I try to think of things that are, you know, quote-unquote helping. You know, I want them to move all the beans from one bowl to the other bowl. I want them to shake the shallot dressing until it just can't be shaken anymore. And those sorts of things, which are, you know, they consider very, very important and, you know, a really great part of making dinner, lets them be there and helping me with it, but they also kind of keeps them out of the way. I also try to allow a little extra time for dinner prep, so I turn it from a chore to a family activity, and that was a big shift for me. Like, I kept thinking, okay, I'm going to have to come home and have dinner on the table at a certain time. So now it takes a little bit longer to make dinner, but through that process, we reduce some screen time, and we spend a little bit more time together as a family. And this is something that I found to be really, really helpful, especially when my daughter was younger. I work a very late day. I get home, 6:30 in the evening, and so dinner often isn't on the table until 7:30 at the earliest. And by that time, your children are getting very, very hungry. And so you want to rush through the routine, and that's when the screen time comes up. So what I started doing is I was actually saving food from the night before for them to kind of nibble on, so I didn't have to rush so quickly and kind of exclude them from the process. So that was another change in routine so they can become more of a family-oriented activity. So this is just one simple case study, you know, for kitchen routines, since this is something that, you know, I brought as a personal example since I do this every single night. But I think if you might look back at that list of when your child's watching screen time, there's probably opportunities in other routines that you have that you might be able to change, you know, to have your child, quote unquote, help you do those things. Laundry is a great example, you know, picking out all the socks. And so trying to think of a way to make what seem like not child-friendly chores into more collaborative activities is a really great way to reduce screen time. And finally, just two more tips on this subject. If you have a little extra space in your kitchen, you can pull out pots and pans so your child can have creative play and cook. We don't have a huge kitchen, but we do have a little nook where she can pretend to cook. And I would say most nights she's not even interested in helping me actually prepare the meal. She just likes to mirror what I'm doing on the side. And then on other nights, it's just too much. And there's absolutely nothing that I can do to include her in the routine. So I tape a piece of paper to the refrigerator and she draws there while I'm doing it. So these are a couple different ways that you can approach having your child in the kitchen with you while you're doing the work, while also keeping them away from the TV during traditionally what might be a mommy-only time. Does anybody have any questions about that or concerns or feedback? No? If you do, feel free to speak up. So this is a somewhat challenging concept, this idea of passive versus active screen time, and it's not something we talk about too much in our daily lives. So when I talk about passive versus active, I'm talking about cognitively passive versus cognitively active. And this is the webinar I was talking about, happens in January, it expands a little bit more. So cognitively passive just means that your child just taking information in, you know, your child just watching a TV, there's not a lot of movement, there's not a lot of feedback, versus cognitively active is they're demonstrating that they're thinking and processing the information. And so when I mentioned earlier that, you know, children under two, passive media has no benefit, that's just kind of the media where they're sitting there and not participating. They're still doing research about whether or not active media has any benefit for children under two. But there has been research that, you know, the type of media that you use with older children, you know, two and above range, there is a significant difference between passive and active screen time. We still really want to try to limit it to about the two-hour range, but there's the nature of what the children are doing in that 2 hours can make a very big difference. So a couple ways of thinking about whether or not screen time is passive. So if your child is alone in front of the TV, especially if they're very young, you know, about, you know, the 2 to 3 year old range, and no one is explaining to them what's happening or asking any questions, that is often considered an opportunity for passive screen time. If your child's zoning out and not responding to his or her name, and I've experienced this as well. You say your child's name several times, and they just don't hear you. They kind of mentally shut off and then are just absorbing what's happening on the screen. Your child's consuming and not creating, so just watching it all come in but not saying or responding to anything. And a really great marker of this is there's a couple shows with which they actively ask kids to respond. And I know Dora and Diego, there's opportunities where they say, you know, please say this. And if your child's watching it and they're not even responding to the prompts that are built into the show, it often says that they're not really paying attention to what's happening in the show. They're kind of zoning out at that point. Another important thing, and this goes back to our routine, if you're watching it, they're watching it. So if you're using opportunity TV at the end of the day, and, you know, I've done this myself, you know, you put on a TV show or a late night show just to kind of unwind, just because it's not intended for them doesn't mean they're not watching it. So if you're watching Late Night with Jimmy Fallon and they're sitting next to you, they're watching it too. So that counts as part of their screen time, even though it's not a children's show intended for them. And this another really important thing about passive screen time is if it's distracting them from other activities. If it's just running constantly in the background and you're trying to play box with them and they keep looking over into it but they're not really interacting with it, that's a good marker that they're just kind of passively consuming it and being distracted by it. So on the flip side, we can think a little bit about what makes active screen time versus passive. So if we're going to think about that two-hour block for the day, your child is talking, moving, and engaged. So they could be watching the very exact same TV show, but if they're up and moving and responding to the prompts, that means they're actually paying attention and listening. Sitting with your child and asking questions about the show. So you don't necessarily have to choose a different show. You might just need to be there with them asking questions. So if they're watching Sesame Street and you say, oh, what color is that? What is Big Bird doing? What do those emotions look like? Like, you're taking an opportunity to turn what could have been a passive screen time into a more active experience for them, you know. And a big part of that is engaging with the media and narrating and highlighting elements of story. Because sometimes children, they're in this in-between phase where the show might be a little more advanced than they're ready for, and you can tell they're missing pieces of the narrative. So you can come along and say, oh, I think he did that because he's looking for something. And you can bring out those points to make the show a little bit more meaningful to them. And then also think about screen time. It's not just TV, and it's not just a movie. Pictures or videos of your child that you've taken during outings and other activities, those are screen time, but it's a really great opportunity for reflection and learning about what the child has done for the day. So, for example, you've gone out, you've done a neighborhood walk, you record it, you come home, and you watch those videos together. That counts as screen time, but it's a really wonderful screen time. It's a chance to talk about your day and to build language together. And just to bond over the activities that you've had together during the day. And I know my three-year-old, she constantly loves to go back and look at videos of activities we've done together in the past, and those are actually her preferred videos to watch, little clips of family activities that where she's the main character. Another really interesting way to get some more active screen time rather than just your traditional children-produced shows, YouTube has a really great untapped resource for very, very young children. So think about short video clips on the internet that your child's expressed an interest in. So if you went to the park and you saw a peacock, you come home and you watch video clips about peacocks, it's a really neat opportunity on multiple levels. One, they're reinforcing something they saw during the day. There's that language exchange between you and the child while you're talking about what you're looking for. So what are we looking for? We're looking for a peacock. Do we want to look for a peacock that has a tail open? We'd want to look for a peacock that's making noise. Is it the white peacock? Is it the blue peacock? There's a really great dialogue that emerges out of the choice making in that activity that still counts as screen time. It's a much more meaningful screen time. Thinking about how your child can be a creator instead of a consumer, and this is also something we'll extend upon a little bit more in the January professional development. What sort of opportunities exist out there, especially for the older children? When I say older, I mean above 2 years old, about how to make them creators of media, you know, art programs, software programming. How can they actually be the ones who are spending time on the screen making something versus just taking something in? And finally, a really great use of active screen time is using it to connect with other people so they understand that the computer is not just this thing that provides content to them, but it can be a thing that connects them to other people. So using it to Skype with grandparents or far away family members is a really great use of active screen time. Still count for that 2 hours, but it's much more meaningful than a purely passive streaming video. So I chose this example very purposefully to visit a dentist, and I've been in this situation myself. So there are some times when it's just impossible. So the example that I presented earlier of, you know, the kitchen example, that's a really best case scenario. So you have the opportunity to include your child. There's the means, there's the space, there's the time. Oh, I'm glad that you like the idea of taping paper on the fridge. Yeah, it was, I actually had a little setup where I taped it on the fridge and I had a half of a box of, I think it was a cereal box that I duct taped there as well with water, water-based paint. And so it became a canvas. And so she was right there painting and taping. And worst case scenario, she went off the paper and it was fine because it was all water-based. But that activity keeps getting pulled out very consistently. Just for those of you who can't see the chat, Shulam has mentioned that she really liked the idea of having painting as part of the kitchen routines or art as part of the kitchen routines in that way. So those are best case scenarios. But there's going to be those opportunities, such as a dentist visit, where there's not much you can do. And you tried to get childcare, but you can't. So what are you going to do? You have a child with you for an hour. So I think an important thing to think about is when you really need to use screen time, because there's no other option, how do you make sure that you make the right choice? So a really important thing is previewing it before you show it to your child. And this is something that's really hard to get in the habit of because we tend to assume, oh, it's a children's show, and I make the same mistake myself. It's a kid's show. I'm sure it's fine. You know, we'll just put it on. And there's a couple challenges with this. One, I know I have very fond memories of childhood videos that we forget we watched at a different age than when our children were. So I think I watched Little Mermaid when I was 9 or 10, but I forget that it's much, much older than a 3-year-old. And I watched it before showing it to my daughter, and I realized there's some pretty terrifying stuff in there. There's Ursula, she's separated from her father, and I thought, I didn't watch this when I was 3. I watched this when I was 9 or 10, and maybe it was a little more appropriate for that. So thinking back to those movies that we hold very fondly in our memory, we may have watched them at a much older age than we're getting ready to show them to our children. So that preview is really important. And previewing it through the lens of a small child is doubly important. Another example I use is the Disney films. You know, a lot of them are classics that we think about, but if we go back, we might be a little horrified by some of the stereotypes that are reinforced that we missed when we watched it when we were children. So thinking about what sort of messages they're sharing. So even if we've seen it 10, 15 years ago, it's important to review it again, both from an adult lens and thinking about what a very small child would think is scary. So this is an important thing too, is thinking about, is the narrative and action at the right level for my child? So there is a very broad range of media out there. You think about Sesame Street, where it has these very quick 5-minute clips intended for a somewhat short attention span. And then the other end of the spectrum, you might have like a very slow pace of A Curious George, which is a full narrative over 20 minutes. So I think it's really important to kind of know where your child is and what narrative pace is appropriate for them when selecting those videos. So if it's too young for them, they're going to lose interest. So if I try to show my daughter Sesame Street right now, it's moving around too much and there's not a consistent narrative that holds her interest. If it's too old for them, such as there's a show Just in Time, that the dialogue is too fast-paced and she has a really hard time keeping up. So, you know, you might not know that just from the first watch on your own, but watch them while they're watching it and you'll get a really good idea if they're keeping pace with what's going on the screen. And this feeds into, have you watched your child while watching the video recently? So while they really develop likes for, you know, Elmo and Sesame Street and whatnot, make sure to periodically watch them while they're watching it because they develop so quickly that their ability to, you know, change narrative paces changes before you know it. So really watch them as they're watching it so you can tell if they're bored and ready to move on. And that happens very, very quickly. So you know, you might think, okay, they've watched Sesame Street, they've watched it 10 times, they love it. And 2 weeks later, Sesame Street might just be totally off the radar for them. So constantly checking in on where they are is an important part of selecting the right media for them. And this goes back to the idea of avoiding tantrums. Am I going to have to turn the video off halfway through? And if the answer is yes, choose a shorter video so you don't set yourself up for the fight. And the dentist example is a really good example. If you know that you're going to be there for 50 minutes or so, then you can choose a 50-minute clip. Don't choose a two-hour movie, because at that point, that's what's really going to get you into the challenge, is when you have to turn off something right in the middle. So before I move on to the final part, which is really talking about our older children, you know, right now we've covered from 0 to 2, really no benefit for passive media at all. You know, don't listen to the labeling. It says it's educational. It's not. There's no benefit to passive media at all. You know, when we talk a little bit more later on about active media, you know, there might be some benefits, but they're still doing research. From your 2 on age, you know, 2 years old and older, you want to think about what is their comprehensive screen time during the day. So if you had jotted down that number at the very, very beginning of what your child's watching and how much you think they're watching, and you think about now adding in the number of what they're watching with their caretakers, what they're watching you watch, what they're seeing in the background while you're doing laundry, what they're seeing you while you're checking your email, that counts as screen time, it might provide a larger number than you had anticipated. And I'm not asking you to share that number. That's more for your reflection of kind of, you know, where you think your child is versus where they might be once you bring in all those kind of hidden screen time factors. And I did the activity myself, and I was shocked at how much higher the daily screen time was than what I had anticipated. So as your child moves from the 2 to 7 range, you know, when you're establishing screen time routines, unfortunately, we have to end on a somewhat dreary note, and that's at around 7 is when children really start moving into bullying. It's a shockingly young age. And the reason I bring it up, and we'll talk about more in March, is when they're very, very small, 0 to 2, screen time's a problem because it's not good for them cognitively. From 2 to 7, you know, screen time can be wonderful, but it's really more about the child interacting with the content on the computer. And it's not much of a social experience. As young as 7 or 8, is when they start moving into the more social sphere of screen time. And the way you look at screen time and media with children of age will have to shift for your older children. So instead of, you'll still have to pay attention to what they're watching, but you have this new dimension of paying attention to who they're speaking with and who they're interacting with. And I'm going to just share some of the research around this as a heads up moving forward. And the reason I say around 7 or 8 years old is because they start seeing the effects of bullying on children around 9 or 10. So you want to get ahead of it. So it may seem very, very young, but 7 or 8 is when you want to have these conversations and really start attending to what your child is doing online with other children. The effects of bullying are drastic, as the bullying can lead to child suicide, severe depression, to dropping out. It's a really catastrophic effect. So it's something that I really stress seriously to pay attention to for children that we often think of as too young to be experiencing this. So 81% of youth say that bullying online is easier to get away with than bullying in person. And as many as 1 in 3 kids have been threatened online. I have peers who are teachers of 3rd and 4th grade, and they say that it's a very comprehensive problem for their students whenever they have an online activity where there's commenting, how much of the comments can degrade very quickly into peer-to-peer dialogue that's just not appropriate. So it's very important to have this conversation as well with, you know, not only your child, but attend to what's happening at school with school activities where children are interacting with each other online. I think there's really wonderful opportunities for those interactions, but they really need to be monitored and attended to around that age group. So 3 million children each year are absent from school each month because they fear bullies. And unfortunately, with social media, home is not the safe place it used to be from bullies. When we were younger, if you were bullied at school, you went home. At least you knew at home you were safe. But the bullying follows you home, when you're using social media, because they can email you or they can write you a message or they can send you a text message, and it's really, really hard to escape it. So it's important to constantly have those conversations around, you know, how things are going and attending to the markers that your child might be being bullied. One of the reasons it's gone so drastically up in the last few years, the bullying issue, is this access to social media. So, you know, a piece of research, and these come from Common Sense Media and the American Pediatrics Association, is that, you know, in the same period from 1985 to 2007 is when internet and social media consumption drastically rose for young children and teenagers. And unfortunately, during that time period, suicide drastically rose. And something that I was very startled to learn is that suicide rates rose 76% for girls aged 10 to 14. Which is an incomprehensible number to me, a child as young as 10 even contemplating that. So it's a very, very important thing to start thinking about with your child, much younger than you would expect, some of the risks of screen time that we may not have considered before then. And this little green box on the right, which I think is an important note to end on, is only 2 in 5 victims will tell their parents. So it's really important that you're aware that something could happen, how to ask those probing questions, and what your rights are when it comes to school. When we talk in March, I'll give you a more comprehensive viewpoint of both how to identify factors and then also how to follow up. But for those of you who don't know, they recently passed the Dignity Act for all students, which is a new training all teachers have to go to, which specifically relates to bullying, the reporting rights, the rights of parents, for this issue, because up until then it was a very gray area where sometimes schools weren't acting in, and now there's very specific time period who is responsible for following through and making sure that bullying is not carried out in the school and does not extend to the home. And I know that's a turn towards the end of the conversation, but I really want to emphasize that the way we look at screen time for our children needs to shift from the different ages. So just a reminder, 0 to 2, not much use. 2 to 7, it's great if it's limited and it's very active. Around 7 or 8 is when we really need to start thinking about how our children are being impacted by their peers rather than simply the screen time itself. So we only have about 8 minutes left. That went very quickly. I'd like to open it up for questions. If anybody has questions or concerns or feedback, now is a great time. You can raise your hand or you can just put it into chat.
The best way for people to ask a question is if they can click on their raised hand, and then we can unmute your phone, and we'll let you know. We'll say your name, and then we will be able to unmute your phone. While people are formulating their questions, I want to take this opportunity to thank Jeannie. What a fantastic overview, both in terms of ages, but also you gave us such specific ideas around managing media with really practical tips. So thank you, Jeannie. That was a fantastic presentation. And also thank you to all the participants. I'm just scrolling down to see if there are any hands raised, and I'm not noticing any yet.
One question that came across in a separate chat was actually a suggestion following up on the kitchen case study, which I find often resonates with parents since it's something we all have to do. And I apologize, I think it's Biella, if I pronounced your name incorrectly, who said another idea is if your child isn't actively helping you, have a craft table in the kitchen so the kids can paint, color, play with Play-Doh, curler beads, et cetera, and be in the kitchen along with you, which is a fantastic suggestion. They don't have to be cooking. They just want to be near you. So whatever that looks like, for your particular child is a really great way to include them in your routines.
Absolutely. Okay, and you know, it's interesting, Jeannie, I just want to point out, it looks like we don't have any phone-in callers. Everyone is online, so if anyone has a question, now's the time to raise your hand. And in addition to thanking Jeannie, I also want to thank Hidden Sparks funders and partners. Jory, if you could move us forward a couple of slides, that would be great. Or Jeannie, actually, if you could move us forward a couple of slides. Oh, great. sorry, if you could pause there. Our upcoming webinars, next week we have one for parents on sustaining motivation, a delicate balance with Meryl Silver. And the next one that's both for parents and teachers is again with Jeannie, passive versus active screen time, where Jeannie's going to focus even more on the second last section that she covered tonight, the passive versus active screen time. So in order to sign up for those webinars, you can go to the Hidden Sparks website, www.hiddensparks.org, or you can call into the Hidden Sparks office. That phone number should be on one of the slides that's coming up soon. Jeannie, if you could go to the next slide, that would be great. And here's a description just of the numerous programs that we have and the multiple people that we've been able to impact through Hidden Sparks in schools. And again, want to thank our funders, and that's on the next slide. And also our partners, the school, the institutions with which Hidden Sparks cooperates. Jeannie and Jory, thank you so much for a fantastic, fantastic session. It looks like we don't have any questions from the chat room. So, Jeannie's saying it was her pleasure, and thank you for having me. Jeannie, we really appreciate your contribution. And thank you to everyone who participated. We hope that you will sign up for future webinars. Please come to the Hidden Sparks website and check out all of our offerings. Thank you so much to everyone. Have a wonderful night.